This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, November 7th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, less is more, more or less. In October of 1912, Harriet Monroe founded Poetry Magazine. That makes this year the magazine's 100th anniversary. To mark the occasion, the editors of Poetry, Christian Wyman and Don Scher, put out an anthology called The Open Door, 100 Poems, 100 Years of Poetry Magazine. I spoke to them about it a month ago on this program, and the first poem I asked Christian Wyman to read was the first poem in the anthology, a very short classic by Ezra Pound. Here it is again.
In a station of the metro, the apparition of these faces in the crowd, petals on a wet, black bough.
Keep that poem in mind as we listen to a few more from the anthology. Some of the poets included are still quite young, and their poems sit cheek by jowl with the likes of Pound, T.S. Eliot, and Marianne Moore. I asked Chris and Don, what must these younger poets think of being in such company?
They're probably worried. It probably produces great anxiety.
I would have freaked out a little if I had my poem in there when I was...
It's a lot to live up to.
I then asked them if there was a poem in the anthology by a younger poet that seemed to be in conversation with a poem by one of the older poets.
You know, there is an odd sort of pairing. I don't think it's explicit, but both Don and I were delighted to find this poem by Lorraine Nitaker in here, and she has several in Poetry Magazine, and one of the youngest poets that we published, named Brooklyn Copeland, writes in a way that's reminiscent of Nitaker. And why don't I read the... I'll read the Nitaker, and then Don can read the Copeland, and you'll certainly hear the similarities. And both are, you know, Midwestern poets. Nitaker's from Wisconsin, lived her whole life up there, except for a short period in New York when she was with Louis Zukofsky.
She was the lover of Louis Zukofsky, the poet who once edited the famous Objectivist issue of Poetry Magazine in 1931, right?
She was. And she got pregnant and had an abortion. It's a sad story. Zukofsky doesn't come off too well in the story. And she went back to Wisconsin and had a difficult life, but was completely unbowed by her life. There's something very tough and triumphant about her, the small poems that she wrote. And some of them are actually long, but they still have the sense of being very compressed. And she did get married later in her life and was happily married, but it took quite some time. Mm-hmm.
And she's having something of a moment now. She's coming back into vogue.
I think she is. There was a biography by a woman named Carol Peters a couple of years ago, a good biography. A
beautiful collected poems.
Right.
Just a few years old.
And she's influenced a lot of people. I read her so hard when I was in my 20s. And at the time, you couldn't get anything but Sid Corman's anthology of her. He had done a short selection called The Granite Pail, which is still a wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful selection. But now there's that collected poems. There's all kinds of other stuff. Mm-hmm. Jenny Penberthy has done it. She's a Nitaker scholar and has really been responsible for resurrecting her career. This poem is called Three Poems.
Is there anything you can say about it before we hear it?
One of the things, if you're a poet, one of the things that's really moving about Nitaker is that she persisted with her work in the face of really complete failure. She had these communications with poets like Zukofsky. Zukofsky was a lifeline even after they had their affair and difficulties. He was a lifeline throughout her life. They corresponded. But she couldn't get a book published. I mean, it took her forever to get a book published, and then it took forever for the book to come out. And it was all these dramas about getting her work out there. And she really had no exposure whatsoever. And so for her to get poems into Poetry Magazine was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And so this one came out in 1963. And not only was it a big deal for her in terms of visibility, but she actually needed the money.
Lived a life of what we would consider extreme poverty.
Yeah. And so this is a relatively late poem. And as you'll see at the end, she talks about that life and about what it's like to wait so long for your work to reach the light of day. 1. River marsh drowse, and in flood moonlight gives sight of no land. They fish. A man takes his wife to town with his rowboat's tin horse, ships his voice to the herons. Sure, they drink, full foamy folk, till asleep. The place is asleep on one leg in the weeds. 2. Prosperity is poverty. I've foreclosed. I own again these walls thin as the back of my writing tablet. And more, all who live here, card table to eat on, broken bed, sacrifice for less than art. 3. Now in 1 year a book published and plumbing, took a lifetime to weep a deep trickle. And that's Nidecker all over right there, because you get an enormous ambition, an actual ambition right there, and a sly sense of humor. She links her own work to getting plumbing.
Which is the practical outcome.
Exactly. She had an outhouse. You know, she had to, until late in her life, she had nothing but an outhouse.
And there at the end, you know, the lines resemble a trickle.
That's
a,
the plumbing.
A brilliant judge of how to space lines, short lines and very succinct lines, as you heard.
The joke is a book published and plumbing. And then she says, in descending lines, very short, took a lifetime to weep a deep trickle.
Yeah.
Is that part of the joke? I mean, it's humor about plumbing.
Well, that to me seems not a joke.
Well, it's Samuel Beckett humor.
Yeah,
right?
It's very dark.
Right?
I mean, it comes from pain, but it is very tough, courageous, stoic. You know,
it's existential and scatological at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
that's wonderful. And so, Don, the Brooklyn Copeland poem, tell us a little bit about Brooklyn Copeland and set up that poem, if you would.
She's a young poet. We've published her a couple times. And at the time we put this book together and published her, she didn't have a book or anything. She's from Indiana, as Chris said earlier, and we don't know her, so that's the full extent of my knowledge
of her
work.
That's what it's like editing. You deal with these people by mail and respond to their poems, but you don't get to know most of them.
Yeah, but you feel that you do from their work.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we're pairing Brooklyn Copeland with Nidecker, but she's her own person. I mean, these are very distinct, powerful personalities.
So her poem is called Prayers, and is there anything that you want to say about it before we hear it?
Well, one thing I would say is that visually it seems somewhat related to Nidecker's lines. I'm not saying she got them from Nidecker or Williams or anyone else who uses this kind of short-stepped line, but it is a striking mode for people who know how to use it and a terrible one for people who don't.
Yeah, that's right.
So one thing you notice is the way the poem looks on the page.
Very short lines, broken oddly sometimes. And
right.
Sometimes a single word will be a single line.
That's right. And yet there's end rhyme even so. The words really chime very distinctly and clearly because of the way the lines are deployed. So yeah, it's very intense and compressed. Prayers end. Nature remains faithful by natural light only, immeasurable, invisible in the wind, visible when blades and branches bend. The wind speaks fluent rain. Despite it, the rain falls straight, and beyond it, abandoned barns defend abandoned men.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
It's spare, it's powerful. In other words, that spareness does not mean lack of feeling or nothing is really withheld other than verbiage, that any kind of verbiage that you would find in a typical poem just doesn't exist here. Every word carries a specific weight and builds up to a real image, and a familiar image, but yet somehow emotionally unexpected.
Almost emotionally unarticulatable. You can't quite tell what the direction or impetus or propulsive force or whatever of this poem is.
Yeah.
Abandoned barns defend abandoned men. Well, do they? Or I mean, they're abandoned, so they're falling apart. The men are abandoned.
Right.
So there is some protection there, but it's not any protection that you can quite recognize.
Yeah.
And then you've got that great title, Prayer's End, which could be the aim of prayer, or
yeah,
could be the end of prayer, the prayer's termination.
Yeah.
Right?
And there, too, you know, both these poets, I've never thought about it until now. There's a lonesome feeling about these poems, but it's not sentimental at all. It's very hard won, I think. The idea that these abandoned barns defend abandoned men is compassionate. She sees how they fit into the landscape and what that landscape has done to them, how they've been left out in the middle of nature.
And I like it the way you know, you think of that Pound poem that we started out with, and that's pure image. You know, that's what imagism comes from. And we're all so familiar with that show, Don't Tell, is what every workshop student is taught. And yet this poem begins with an abstract statement. Nature remains faithful by natural light only. Well, that's something that you can disagree with or agree with or argue with or
either way,
whatever.
You have to think about it.
Right.
You have to think really about it. Think about that.
And then it moves into that image. But that abstract statement is the lens through which you have to see the rest of the poem. And so this is a departure from Pound. Not that Pound stuck with imagism. He didn't stick with anything for long.
But, right.
But
we're stuck with Pound.
Right. Yeah.
Christian Wyman and Don Scher are the editors of Poetry Magazine, and their anthology, The Open Door, 100 Poems, 100 Years of Poetry Magazine, is just out from the University of Chicago Press. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.